Love Cold. Receiving incoming transmission in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
A warm welcome to all you lovely beings. This is Love Cult Transmissions, a space for spirituality, mysticism, the occult, and alternative life ways. And now introducing your host, Justice the Mystic.
Hello, lovers. It is I, Justice the Mystic, and this is Love Cult Transmission 0003. This is the new moon transmission on the 17th of September in the year 2020. I have a brilliant, brilliant show for you today. It's actually an interview, the first interview here on Love Cult Transmissions with my dear friends and brilliant artists, Kevin and Dylan. This conversation went on so long that I've actually decided to split it up into two separate shows. So this show, this first part of the interview, will be focusing on conversation with my friend Dylan Gonzalez, who is a photographer and creative being and all around lovely, lovely human being. But before we get into that, I want to tell you of a few things to keep your eyes, ears, and hearts open towards. As always, on Tuesday evenings on Instagram, I release a show called Tarot Tuesday, where I pull tarot cards specifically for the week, and I will have a conversation about how those cards are affecting you and will affect you during the week. Secondly, there will be a release of Love Cult merch in the very, very near future that is beautiful and powerful and will help you become who you desire to become. And last but not least, I am working on a way for you, the listener, the devotee, the lover, to be a part of what we are doing here at Love Cult. So keep your eyes, ears, and hearts open for those things. And now, without further ado, the first ever interview here on Love Cult Transmissions, an interview with my dear, dear friends, Dylan and Kevin. Ready?
Yep.
Ready as you'll ever be? Action. Thanks, guys.
Hi.
For coming on my show.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Hello.
A lot of podcasters do this thing where they have this first, a lot of podcasters that I listen to do this thing where they have like a first question for people if they're a first time guests on the show. And since you are the first actual guests, you'll get the first question.
The first time around.
And it is a question, though, I think I did on my last show.
So it's the second first question.
It's the second first question. But it's a totally different show now. And so it's a different question.
I'm following.
And because we're going to split it up, I don't know if we should do one and then the other. But then the other person has too long to think about the answer to the question. So let's just do it right off the bat.
And then we answer at the same time.
Do you want us to like introduce ourselves?
This is part of the question.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Cheating.
And so it's the premiere of the premiere interview question, and it is called the question of Absalom.
Oh, wow.
The question of Absalom is this. Well, first of all, are you
so ready for it?
Are you ready for the question of Absalom?
We have to invite it in.
Yes.
I'm ready.
Okay. Are you ready for the question of Absalom? Here we go. Who are you?
That's a good question.
You go first.
Am I going first? My name's Dylan. And I am a person that makes things.
Beautiful.
Do you want me to go?
How and why do you come to a point in your life? Because I asked the question specifically because it can always change and it can always be a different answer.
Totally.
So how do you come to a position in your life where when asked the question of Absalom, that's your definer. That's.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, it feels like a very intentional thing to phrase it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've come to actually, there's two streams of thought into it, but
okay.
I've come to a point for myself where the various things that I do in making, the two major things of that being making photographs and doing writing,
yeah,
that kind of interrelate to each other. Both of those things, I've come to a place that I feel very comfortable with. Both of those things don't feel separate or different from each other. And more than that, they feel not necessarily like the thing that I arrive to, but more the things that I'm like arriving to something else through. Right,
through. Like a vehicle of sorts.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I, yeah, so like the, rather than the mediums being the thing, the mediums are just kind of the vehicle or the container to get to talking about something or thinking about something that are just acts of like cultivation.
Right.
The other side of that is just more on a personal level. I've definitely gone through such a back and forth of what feels like a valid existence to define myself in that way.
Sure.
Like I know Kevin and I have talked about this a lot of like even just the comfortable level of like at different points being comfortable saying I'm a photographer, which even still oftentimes I feel uncomfortable saying that
because
it just doesn't feel valid. But I think a lot of that is really just over time, like growing and cultivating myself in the same way that the art is a cultivation of something, like just myself. I'm a cultivation of something that I'm trying to arrive at.
Right.
And so I think all of that gets kind of interwoven into an idea of just like a person that makes things.
A creative being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
That's my answer.
I love it.
That's great.
I'm Kevin.
My name is Kevin, and I am a creative thinker and we'll say aspiring filmmaker.
Yeah.
But I say that because in the same sense that Dylan's talking about, I have also been trying to like take ownership of the things that I like quote unquote aspire to be and just saying
right.
like, that is who I am
right.
because I have those desires and like creative drives, so I'm just gonna take it and own it.
Right.
So I say aspiring, but I try to just say I'm a filmmaker because
right.
then that becomes my identity.
Right. That yeah, that's great. That's that's beautiful. As the first answers to the first question,
taking it off with a bang.
Bang. Yeah, it's beautiful. The way we'll do it, I think, is I'll direct questions at Dylan first, and then we'll move into a time where I'll direct questions at you, Kevin, sure. so that if need be, it can be separated into two
yeah.
different shows,
yeah,
which would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, conversations are conversations, but
right.
we are really good friends, and these types of conversations are what we have on a regular basis.
Totally.
So it's fun for us to be all in on a interview, even if it's directed at a specific person.
Yeah.
And because that was both of your answers, I guess, it's hard to, for me to try and divide the conversation into one aspect and another.
Totally. Yeah.
But what I hear you saying especially in the last part of that is, this idea of assuming a persona and allowing yourself to grow into that expression.
Yeah.
Which has been a lot of my magical thinking recently of, the concept of new thought and the way you think and the way you think about yourself and the way you think about your life is in some senses causative of what will actually unfold in your life. The way that you think about yourself. So we'll say that as a filmmaker or as a photographer, like the way you think about yourself in a sense prepares a way for you to become that thing. And you find these ideas in different realms of magical thinking and philosophical thinking and just different life ways of coming to a point in your life where you realize, oh, I am whatever I make myself to be.
Totally.
And one example that I've stumbled upon recently, which was very surprising to me, was Anton Sander LaVey, who was the founder of the Church of Satan, and basically created this concept, probably not created, but expounded upon this concept in his work and in his writings about creating your total environment and creating a space around you, creating your persona as an outfit, like as how you appear to the world, and how you think and how you talk to yourself. So kind of throwing that back at you, and I guess I'll direct this towards you, Dylan. What journeys... what journeys do you feel like you've taken in your life to bring you to that point currently where you're recognizing, oh, this is something I enjoy doing. This is something that I'm passionate about. And like you said, these are the avenues to arrive at other things.
Totally.
I want to commit myself to these things.
Yeah.
As processes in my life.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
Cool.
I mean, I think the first thing I think, and this might almost sound kind of antithetical to what you're saying about like you follow these paths, you make these decisions to cultivate a certain type of life. This might sound antithetical to it, but I don't think it is. But I find more for myself is like, the further and further I go, or maybe better put, like the further and further I get pulled into a certain lifestyle that is built around photography, more and more, it doesn't necessarily change like what my life looks like, but more changes my inhabiting the life that I'm living. Right. So like, I think the best way I can explain it is the thing that draws me to it really more so than anything is at its like best moments, the various parts of making a photograph, whether that's like being in the space, actually taking the picture, or then working on the picture afterwards of seeing the negative come up, scanning it, like sitting with it for a long time of seeing where that picture can go. All of those different points. At its best, those are kind of the most concise points of like, however you want to relate it to, of some moment of like buoyancy or like what would feel like, I don't know, enlightenment or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think it can be really easy to then feel like, oh, I have to do everything in my power to arrive at those types of moments as often as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think really more so what's happened is as I started to kind of see myself slipping into like, that's the thing I want to center my life around, was really more just like in normal everyday moments of just how I was living my life anyways, it mm-hmm. always kind of was then slowly directing itself back to those experiences and informing those experiences and vice versa of like just normal stuff that would even feel not like moments of like intentional productive cultivation or something of like just watching a like fun TV show or watching a movie or just like reading a book, how often I felt for myself that those then became moments where it ignited some like chain of thinking that brought me back to those passionate moments.
Right.
And so again, it kind of goes back to this thing that like really any part of that like photographic process, which I could say the same for the writing process, like those heightened moments in the writing process, realizing that those are kind of just like waypoints for something else that's happening, and the other experiences kind of just all get like rounded into it.
Come into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think that obviously then does inform like decisions I make, like especially on, I don't know, quote unquote, like professional or like life decisions that are determining like spatially where I'm going or how I'm occupying my time of like what I'm working towards.
Right.
It definitely informs those things, but on the day to day, I don't think it necessarily drives those things rather than just keeps redirecting those things back to something.
Yeah. And in informing, like, another question that I had for you was like seamlessly working right now, but like, how is the process, of taking photography, of making a picture, making a photo? How has the entire process and learning the steps of the process informed how you navigate
living? Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of it really just has to do with my relationship to the idea of a photograph anyways,
right?
Which is the thing that has kept me like being drawn to it, is there's some attractive power to it of I started shooting and for a long time kept shooting and was very conscious of the fact that I didn't really understand photography.
Right.
And I still feel like that most of the time.
Okay.
It feels like the photograph as just a concept of like a thing that is made and is out in the world is something very often I feel like I don't have a grasp on. But that's not a deterrent, but rather an attractive force to it. Where
do you find, I'm sorry.
No, no.
Do you find in your life in previous times when things have been processes of that nature where you have come up against a wall and think, oh, I don't fucking get this. Has that been something in the past that has deterred you from continuing on that path?
Yes.
And what makes this different?
Yeah. So completely. Like, yeah. I think it's very much in my nature. I really, really, up until I started shooting photographs and that really became like such an important part of my life. Up until that point, I very much was of the personality where I wanted, if I started something that I had an idea about wanting to do, or because I've always been creative and like taken that out in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
If I approached something, I wanted to be able to master it really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so my relationships with things were either I couldn't do that, and so then I just stopped committing myself to it.
Right.
Or I felt like I did have some form of mastery, but that however I was quantifying that mastery then made the thing not interesting anymore.
Right. I'm raising my hand because that's how I've operated the majority totally. Of my
and
life.
And that was the binary that I oscillated between. And that was my I'm relationship.
I'm either really good at something or I don't. I tried it and it's not for me.
Totally. And both of those things, the outcome became like not committing to it.
Yeah.
There like wasn't a level of commitment to either of those pathways.
Right.
And then photography.
Because if you were good at it, it became uninteresting.
Uninteresting and non-fulfilling.
Right.
In a way that I imagined it would be at the like inception. Of the passion for it or something.
Yeah.
And photography has been completely outside of that realm in something that I've rather than even this just being like a part of it, like the inherent, like essential property of it for me is something which I don't have a grasp on and can't interact with, like can't understand when it's good and when it's bad. Like it's hard for me to work my way through that. I don't have like an answer for that. And, but that's been the first time where that became something which informed a like sense of fulfillment and drive for it.
Yeah.
And then entirely has affected. I mean, it like, even when I think of the ways like leading up to when I kind of really started photographing was a part where I felt like the most, the like years or so leading up, I felt the most like disjointed from any sort of sense of creativity, which really is to say like disjointed from any sense of self.
Right.
And felt kind of the most like asphyxiated or the most like anemic in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized like as that's become a thing where I'm like really consciously leaning into the fact of committing myself to something that feels challenging in a way of like a constant challenge. It never resolves itself in that way. Then informs like the other creative. Like I didn't start writing again because writing is something I grew up doing. That was probably the first thing that I like really felt like on a really interior level connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped writing for a long time and I really didn't start writing again until I was making photographs, and that like entirely informed.
That's beautiful.
That.
Yeah.
But then I do see that then just start to bleed out into kind of what I was saying at the start of also then the lines between like what my artistic practice and then the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Those being like two different boxes. Just like over time, slowly more and more is just kind of fading away.
Right.
In a way that those like get closer and closer to feeling like some sort of equilibrium between the two of kind of what I was saying of like, it really informs more than anything, just every experience, even on like non-conscious levels becomes part of the practice.
Right.
Part of my artistic practice. And all of that is imbued with this feeling of like them, it being inherently kind of resistant and inherently ungraspable.
Mm-hmm.
But that being just like the drive of it and okay with that tension.
Cause I hear what you're saying in that those two aspects of life that were formerly separated out are now merging and informing and rolling around into some form of amorphous
existence.
Can you expound possibly on the like philosophical or life way importance of that boundary disappearing?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've approached it in several different ways and learned from those of like what then for me feels like the healthiest way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had times that feel like highly productive times where everything seems like an opportunity for digging into it and pulling from it directly for something that I'm trying to say in an art. So like every book I'm reading feels like it has things in it that I can mine away from it.
Right.
That feels highly productive and highly energetic. I feel like the danger in that is sometimes it's so necessary, I found, for on the other side of it to let the lower levels work. Because that feels like very...
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so that feels like very high level, like active thinking.
Okay.
When I'm doing that like mining and cultivation parts. But I feel I start to run out of energy really quick when I do that.
Right.
And not just like mental exertion energy, but just like the ability to like cultivate ideas. I start to lose the energy to do that and wear myself out when I'm like trying to pull from everything.
Right.
And so the other side of that is I feel like there are times that I've recognized that on the surface feel like very non-productive times of like, I'm just hanging out. Right. I'm just going on a walk. And not like going on a walk of like, I'm going on a walk and like letting that be time to like process my thought. Like just literally
going on a walk
and like looking at my neighbor's houses and like just doing that.
Not for the mining purpose of trying to drum up some inspiration or visual stimulation.
What I've realized is how much that is part of it for me, how I conceptualize it is those are the times where I'm letting my like active, like upper mind part rest in that sense and be able to just like be present and not have to be thinking. And that's allowing space for then the lower part of like the germinating thing to happen. And I'll recognize, I mean, I do a lot of like very small, like note writing throughout the day, whether it's on my phone or I have notebooks that I'm just scratching stuff in. And those feel like moments of where the lower kind of stuff comes out in little, and I don't ever really look back at those. It's more just times to like, by the act of writing it down, it starts to pull it more towards the surface.
Right.
And then I'll realize like months down the line that little things that were coming up in those moments then slowly start to put themselves together kind of in their own time and on their own force. Like I feel like I have very little work to do in that.
Right.
They start to put themselves together in things that are more cohesive and like a thing.
Right.
That's awesome. That seems also like the, like a perfect, I don't know, like comparison to like thinking you're creative and just like day to day lives where it's like actively being creative and pulling things out. And then like just going on a walk and those things are starting to creep into each other where like, your walks without you trying are feeding into your creative energy. Which
and
is awesome.
I think too, like the thing that feels really healthy to me about it is rather than going into this part of like, I'm going down this avenue of like, I'm this creative person. And so that means I have to be outwardly exerting creative force, even if that's not to anyone else, but myself, but like exerting that creative force, it just is not authentic to how I live my life.
Right. And to me, that seems very, young.
Yeah.
That was a very young mentality for me personally.
Yeah.
It was like, start the timer. Now I'm creating.
Yes.
Yep.
Instead
of set aside part of your day.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is like when people, you have to show up for the work. Like you're reading Stephen Pressfield, you know, you have to show up for the work and make the time out of your day. If you are committed to being any type of self-employed or self generated artist of any kind. But there also comes a point in which this phenomena that happens starts taking place quite naturally over time. It's like I am not so intent on separating out this is my creative time and this is my non-creative time and they're like totally separate from each other but it's this one like understanding that life is creative coming back to the first thought that we had of like you are what you create you are a creation and that the whole thing is working together on a conscious and unconscious level of sorts.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it ties in with the like occult principles that I study of the divine masculine and the divine feminine, where the masculine is putting out seed, is a force applied, and the feminine is this reception and cultivation, and this growing and germination of what the seed has sown inside of it, and this growing. And I mean, I think that that comes for all of us from being even open to the idea of creatives as gender not being necessarily in alignment with sex, but understanding that we are both masculine and feminine inside whatever sex we were born into.
Totally. I mean, I think that's a really great point, because I find myself on macro and micro levels, like on in every part of the process, sometimes very consciously having to embody those things too. Like I can feel myself in writing, because writing for me feels like much more of a interior thing. Like I necessarily have to go within and be in that space to then like exert the writing. Right. Whereas photography, I can be a little more on the sidelines and just watching it happen sometimes.
Which is profound to me, because what you're talking about is the idea of language and the idea of image.
Yeah.
Which in, I'm just bringing my,
yeah,
my lens to the table, which in like, esoteric and occult knowledge are like the conscious and the subconscious.
Totally.
Of when you're writing, when you're using language to express a thing, there is some intent that has to be, that has to take place.
Yeah.
Too. And even when you are masterfully combining imagery into your writing, there's still a very specific force applied.
Totally. Yeah. And then within both of those, I really find like how consciously I feel like, oh, I need to exert more of a masculine voicing in this, or I need to exert more of a feminine voicing in this. And really both times, like anytime I'm being conscious of that, it's, I can tell it's me wanting to try and kind of create an equilibrium in that, between those.
Totally.
Because I can think like in both examples, or then as a whole, how much it just really for me requires the balancing of those two.
Right.
Exertion and then like
reception.
Yeah. And how much that is like a consistent on all levels of it. Like I can even think to just like on the level of like writing a sentence structure or something, you know, like that level of it, I still become very aware of the fact of oscillating between those two.
Right.
Energies.
Right. You used a phrase earlier that I want to come back to and ask for, and I know that this is an unanswerable question, but that's what I do. That's what I ask. Those are the types of questions that I'm curious about. Yeah. But you were talking about your idea of an image, or your idea of a photograph, and saying that you don't know what that is, and I understand that. There are endless answers to this, but in your heart, what do you come, what is the place that you come to where you say, this is my idea of a photograph?
Yeah. That's hard. That's a hard question. I think more recently for me, cause that's the other thing, is I think as I change, that idea necessarily changes. So I can only really speak to, I guess, like right now, what that means. So right now what that means is I'm much more interested and have been much more attracted to kind of the language and methodology of like abstract expressionism and painting. And so what those things entail is much more kind of like kind of what we were talking about, like the feminine unconscious level of stuff, because it relies a lot on immediate expression, kind of random chaotic expression,
right,
just coming out without any kind of filter of process. And then there's the level of then you kind of respond to that thing and make decisions, but it's that back and forth. That becomes a really difficult thing to do with photographs because the technology is directly about doing realistic reproductions of what's in the world.
Right.
But for me, that's what's really interesting and invigorating about pursuing that via the photograph is that when it's done right, and I don't know if I've personally, for me, felt like I've done that.
Yeah.
But what I'm always striving to do is make a photograph which works on both those levels, works as a like unconscious reproduction, while also it necessarily like is found within the world.
Right.
And I think what's cool about that is my critique of like, if we're talking about abstract expressionist painting, is it can very quickly become like very apolitical and very solipsistic because it's just about the artist expressing what's inside of them,
right,
and not having to put a lot of thought into how am I a subject in the world,
mm-hmm,
and how is that informing my unconscious reproductions.
Right.
But because the photograph is directly grounded in productions of reality,
mm-hmm,
it's inescapable to have some referent to the world,
right,
and what's going on socially or politically around that.
Right.
And so for me, like the closest my pictures ever get to that, or when I feel like it's doing that best, is when it can work on both those levels as being something that is just a visual formal thing that you can have a like unconscious like psychological relationship to.
Right.
But then through that, you necessarily have to arrive at thinking about the world and thinking, right, about your place in the world and your responsibilities in the world.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know if that answers.
No, that's great.
Okay.
That, yeah, this is, also a callback that ties in beautifully to that answer is, you were talking about when you, especially when you first got into it, into making photography, you didn't know what makes a good photo and what makes a bad photo. Which I don't know if that's knowable really.
Yeah.
But, what I'm asking for description on maybe, or explanation on maybe, is, the feeling that arises when you see something you perceive as a good photo.
Mm.
And is your perception of a good photo and a mediocre photo literally just the difference of a feeling?
Hmm. Or it's a good question.
Is there also technique involved? Things of that nature.
Yeah. I think so. Kind of, I can maybe explain a little bit my route into the type of photographs I like to make, which is so rooted in the type of photographs I like.
Right.
But even before photography, I've always been very well aware of myself, and I don't know if I always had this language, but that I'm very driven by formalism. Like the first thing I always look for is like style and form.
Mm-hmm.
And that is always like, if there's like a type of photograph or a body of work that the ideas behind it are really exciting to me,
mm-hmm,
and the subject matter is really exciting to me, and like what the actual photographs are of is really exciting to me. But if the actual like production of the picture, like the thing you're looking at, isn't exciting to me, I have a hard time getting into it.
Right.
The whole vice versa of that is there's a lot of photographs that I really like that, because the actual form of it is exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I get past that, everything else behind that, like the subject matter, the content,
right,
what it's talking about, how it's situated within the world, oftentimes then falls flat.
Right.
But I've invested myself like psychologically in it because right, just the form of it, the actual like aesthetic material of it is pleasurable to me.
Right.
And what was your original question? I kind of got lost on that train of thought. What does it look like when I look at a good photograph?
Yeah. And what does it feel like?
What does it feel like?
The feeling.
So like for me, like, let me, I'll talk about Mark McKnight because he's a photographer who I've showed you before. And
yes.
So that's partially why I really like Mark McKnight, who is a contemporary photographer, who is really doing kind of referential work, which I didn't even know this when I first saw him. This has kind of even bolstered my like appreciation of him even more.
Yeah.
But doing very referential into this style of photography called formalism or straight photography that is like first and foremost about the image itself.
Okay.
This came out about in a time of like early to mid 20th century where there's these photographers who are really trying to establish themselves as like standalone artists and that the photograph can be like the standalone thing. And so what they were interested in was making forms out of the world. And so often they would do, you know, photographs of nudes of women or landscapes, but rather than trying to just like accurately reproduce exactly what was going on there, they're using like exploiting the detail and tones that photography offers as a way to turn those things into forms, almost disjointed from the things themselves.
Interesting. Okay.
But there is a certain point where when you're looking at these things, you're realizing like, oh, this is a bunch of cis white males who are creating forms out of a very specific type of female nude.
Right.
And that's what they're reproducing over and over. And they can insist as long as they want that they're making forms. But at a certain point, you have to realize like behind those forms, they're also cultivating a certain type of language of talking about something.
Right.
What Mark McKnight does is use that language and then change the referent that everything is built upon. So he's doing a lot of landscapes, but then around those landscapes, he's also doing lots of nudes of men, gay men, having sex, like in these landscapes.
Right.
They're more often than not, he talks about like they're his body type that he's choosing to photograph. Mm-hmm. So it's usually like bigger men, very hairy. But he's still doing that. So he's not abandoning the project of that type of formalism.
Right.
But now he's bolstering it even more by adding on the back end. And so for me, there's something so pleasurable about seeing the photograph. And just first and foremost, it is like a really gorgeous, beautiful production of work, like on a technical level, on just like an artistic level.
Right.
It is like a really well executed thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then when, if you take any more time with that and you sit with it, then it creates this psychological space to investigate. For him, he's talking a lot about like queer phenomenon and like queer psychology,
right,
and eroticism. And so those are the things that he's working with that once you sit with it for any amount of time, you're forced to kind of get into that psychological right. space and sit with it. And,
right.
And that for me is the most like satisfying experience with any photograph is when it delivers the goods and is a good photograph, but then
technically
yeah. and yeah, aesthetically
yeah.
delivers the goods, but then is also able to then once it's kind of that almost is just like the Trojan horse or something that gets you in the door. And then once you've stepped in, it says, oh, now you're here. Like now we're going to have to confront all these things.
We need to have a conversation.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about it. And that's always the most interesting thing.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, I mean, really initially that was like why I was drawn to the idea of working in both text and image.
Right.
Is because text very necessarily, like you were saying, has to have an intent and a point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like that it can do that. Sometimes I think I use that as a crutch and I'm really trying to work to like be able to let the image alone do that while also in the context of with text do those things.
Do you find yourself having to ambiguate your text in certain...
Completely. I mean, both of them, I really feel like are these two kind of poles where the text very easily, obviously, can become very direct and decided.
Mm-hmm.
The image can very easily become very ambiguous and amorphous and non-directive. And I'm always on both of those trying to pull them towards each other. Where in the image, I'm always trying to pull it towards the directive and towards the like intent.
Right.
and the text I'm always trying to bring towards the ambiguous and towards, because that's the other thing too, like kind of in the same way that the photograph just as a medium is this kind of ambiguous thing that I never have a grasp on.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that draws me to any type of making is that the whole reason for doing it is because I'm grasping with things that are inanswerable, that I don't have. I mean, because if they were answerable, like there's no point in making the artistic work about it. Like you might as well just say what the answer is to these things that I'm grappling with.
Right.
What the artistic medium kind of offers is that ambiguity of you never have to come to an answer. You can just sit in the question and that can be enough. Right. Like,
right.
And at its,
I mean, better possibly.
Totally. Totally. Like that really is the like most productive mode of discourse or consideration is just inhabiting the question and letting that be a fulfilling, like fueling part.
Space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. If you're feeling high or if you're feeling low, come now gather round with ears to hear and hearts to know. Listen for the sound when you hear the chime. It's tarot time when the mountain seems too hard to climb. It's tarot time. It's tarot time. It's tarot time. Yeah, it's tarot time. You heard the chime. It's tarot time. This is the part of the show where I shuffle the tarot deck and pull a card for us. Today, I have pulled the Strength card, which is a card of strength, of patience, of compassion, and of self-control. It's strength not in the outer, the sense of the outer, in the sense of the physical strength, like big arms and strong legs, although I do enjoy, but it is a card of inner strength, of having this compassion for yourself. It's a picture of a lady that is seated with a lion, but her hand is rested gently on the lion's head in its beautiful golden mane. And this is suggesting that the lady has done what she needs to do. The figure in this card has done what she needs to do to tame the lion. She has had compassion for the lion. She has learned to work with the lion so that it will not consume her. She is the lion queen. This card is all about learning how to be self-disciplined and learning how to be compassionate towards yourself so that you can exhibit a certain amount of strength, so that you can know what you need to know and do what you need to do on a inner emotional level. This is an inner strength, a mental strength, an emotional strength that allows you to be in charge and in control of situations. Sometimes, you know this, sometimes when we are put in certain situations, we're coming up against this very animalistic instinct of, I want to either run away because I'm scared, or I want to stand up and fight. But there is a sense of strength where you can charge towards that thing, not necessarily in the purpose of fighting it, but stand strong and know where your boundaries lie. This is a card of discovering where your personal boundaries are. So this lunar cycle, as we're experiencing the new moon this week, we are resetting our boundaries. We are resetting our inner strength and allowing the gentle and compassionate feminine to tame the lion that is inside of us. With self-confidence and self-control, we move forward with strength in this world. That's all I have for you today on Tarot Time. Now back to the interview with Dylan and Kevin. I love you. Do you, I have, especially in the past, struggled. I don't like that word, but kind of wrestled with this idea of needing to over-explain and needing to over-explain my work and what I put out into the world.
That too.
So that people who are offended or don't understand have like a gateway into it. And I'm coming to a point now where I'm kind of understanding what you're talking about with your text and your image, kind of trying to meet somewhere in the middle and create a conversation around an idea instead of having an ambiguous form and a directed directed form. Has that always been your intent with writing and image, or is that something that you're like discovering along the way? Because this, that's the need to over explain myself as a creature, as a being, has created lots of frustration in my interpersonal life. And I'm now learning to go, I don't have to explain who I am to fucking anyone. And that's liberating. Is there a point or is there a process in which you found that, or is this part of that process, or
maybe yes to both of those?
Okay.
Like the most direct part of that I can think is like really the start for me of starting to really be involved with photography and really to take up writing again.
Okay.
Came at the time when I was graduating college.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I say I wasn't writing, but I was writing in, for school. Like, I was constantly writing for school and was very invested in that. Like, took it very seriously, like, on a personal level, took that kind of writing very seriously and wanted to develop that as a craft. But, so I went to school for English, like, literature studies. And so that type of writing has to have a thesis to it, right? Like it has to have a point that you're trying to defend. Any type of academic writing, like that's what it's trying to do. And so I think because of that,
so interesting.
I was very driven by, I mean, just because that's the expectation. I was very driven by that kind of writing that is defending a point, even if it's like these kind of ambiguous or abstract points. Like it's the essay form of that, like the academic essay form is rooted in defending a point. And I just started to get really exhausted by that and recognize that there were things that I wanted to talk about or wanted to think about that just couldn't work in that mode. Like didn't, there wasn't space in the academic essay for certain things that I was driven by because the things didn't have answers. Like they couldn't be parsed down in that way. And so that's really like partially why I started being really interested in photography was it was this whole polar other end to
totally different world
of I never had to worry about getting to that point. The danger in that is when that starts to go too far is then you kind of wipe your hands of like any form of like social responsibility or which is a huge part of who I am. Like that is necessarily informs my space in the world, those concerns and that taking up that space. And so then I think really when writing started to pull back into the practice, it was kind of that then recorrecting of I want to also like be firm on where I stay, but not have to explain it. I think that's the thing, like not have to. And I don't think I've arrived at any. I think I'm like very much still figuring what that looks out like look like working, for myself. And don't think that I often succeed at it. I don't even know if that's a parameter to use. But I feel like more often than not it is me figuring out what that looks like.
Right.
Which is maybe what the process always is just figuring out what that looks like.
Right.
Because I'm just not satisfied with, there's a lot of photographers or artists who really try and defend their, like, if they get critiqued that their photography or their bodies of work are like not concerned with the world or not taking into account their space in the world or their, they'll often like argue, you know, like it doesn't have to be, which I agree with. It doesn't have to be,
sure,
but for me, that's just doesn't cut it and isn't satisfying enough. Right. And I just need that element to it, which I mean, if I'm really to like, was so informed by the type of writing that I learned to do in school.
Right.
It's just, that was too limiting because it didn't offer the opportunity to talk about things that can't come to a conclusion.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
This is an odd question, but it's the one that's arising.
Yeah.
And it has to do with your academic experience and specifically in writing and having to defend a thesis and come to a specific point.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's colonized thinking?
That's a good question.
Or is it just logical thinking, or is it,
I don't know if it can
patriarchal, like,
right.
Do you understand?
No,
completely. Where I'm coming from?
Yeah, okay. Totally. I think like the simplest answer is to say yes, but I think yes is too simple of an answer.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I can only speak from my own experience. The school that I went to and the programs that I were in were very like socially driven English programs.
Very cool.
So, the majority of any of my classes, what they were talking about, which is, you know, the wave of maybe in the like 80s and 90s to present, that wave of English discourse is about using the language of the oppressor to undo the language of the oppressor, which is something that's really interesting. Like,
that's,
I'm
very
now kind of even connecting that so much to the work that I'm working on right now,
right.
Is kind of working in that mode. Because, yeah, I mean, it is, but like, I think, like, maybe one of the biggest influences on me of all time was someone who I learned in school, this writer named Gloria Anzaldúa, who kind of created this whole branch, or was a huge person in creating this whole branch of kind of philosophy and discourse that's like borderland philosophy. And so she's writing from a place of between like Mexican and American identities, but also how that has to do with queer identity, how that has to do with disabled identities. But I mean, she was educated on the American academic system, and she's using those discourses to break those things apart.
Right.
And there's something really interesting to me of that, of it's really like working towards this point of liberation of using the things that have built you up to arrive at a point where you get torn down completely. Right.
Right.
And I think for me, that's something that on a personal level has become really important to me, because, you know, I was learning a lot of those things and coming up in a type of discourse where it was really about that kind of dismantling and tearing apart and tearing down. And I was really, I've naturally just was drawn to it and took up that kind of thinking,
right,
without ever acknowledging who I was. And realizing like, oh, I'm talking about the patriarchy, but like, I'm a guy. Like, how do I talk about the patriarchy and not talk about my implication in the patriarchy? You know, how do I talk about like white supremacy and not talk about my implication in white supremacy?
Right.
And so I think on a personal level that has become much more now about how do I just tear down myself, like tear apart everything that I've on an interior level been built upon. And I think what I've been working towards, this is very recently, to the point that I don't even know if I've consciously like reflected this, but that is 100% what my like artistic practice is about.
Right.
Is creating the space that allows for that like interior annihilation.
Yeah.
Into
working. The working. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What a great conclusion to come to from that
yeah.
question that just arose.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. That was beautiful. Do you feel like in your work, kind of piggybacking off of what you just said, do you feel like in your work you have, I know you have several different projects that you're working on currently, but do you have like an overarching theme or something you feel like this is a calling that I am supposed to bring into the world through my image and through my writing, or a specific feeling that you're trying to evoke when people are looking at your work or reading your work? Or I'm trying to use the word work less.
Mm.
So when people are looking at or reading your creation.
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, I think it's hard because I think really like I'm so young in my practice and I might always feel that way, but like on, I don't know, I don't really like the terms that I'm using, going to use right now, but like just on the terms of like what projects I have under my belt, it's not a lot, it feels like.
Okay.
Like especially just how things work of like, you know, I think I'm working on one thing for like 3 or 4 years, and then on the like fourth year I realize it's something else, and then it feels like I started a new project, but it's really just like the thing I've been working on for that long, which that's what it always feels like, even when I've, you know, put some like landmark in of saying, okay, this is where this body of work ends and now I'm working on something else.
Right.
I mean, it really is just continuation. Something.
Yeah.
But I do think that continuation, if I look at like on the most kind of general trends of it, a lot of it for me has to do with personally investigating my own personal history.
Mm.
On a very like open, in a very open way. So when I say personal history, that means like what I've experienced, but then also talking about family history, talking about like geological history,
right,
talking about like psychological history or like national histories. Mm. I continually, that kind of becomes the well for me to go back in. But like all things, that really just feels like a vehicle to talk about something else that is the thing that I can't really talk about, like the thing that I don't really know. But kind of unearthing those things to understand myself better.
Yeah.
But also in order to understand myself better as a means to tear down things and build things up.
Mm.
So like, I think, you know, one of the like first real body of work that I felt like was a body of work was the work I started doing after the fires that were around here, which was like in 2017, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
I think 2017. So.
And I started shooting work, and that was really the first time where I felt on like a spiritual level connected to what I was doing, where it felt like, oh, this is what it feels like.
Like
this,
a sacred moment.
Yeah.
Like,
and this is what I've been like working towards.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that was there. I knew that was out there. And I just like continually felt like I was like blindly reaching for it. And then it finally was like, oh, that's what it feels like.
Mm.
And then that kind of has set into motion like everything that I've done since then.
Mm.
But like that body of work, you know, it started as that. And then I just was shooting so many things that felt unconnected, and it started to collect itself into, for me, talking about like my personal history with religion and the church and what like spirituality means to me. And that one feels completely unsettled. I kind of have put it on the back burner for now.
Okay.
And it is kind of sitting out there for what it is, but I actually was just thinking in the shower today about that one of like, it definitely doesn't feel done. And I'll have random times where I kind of feel this urge to like want to start working on it.
Yeah.
And I kind of, for me, just have to right now be like, that's not the thing that's occupying my life right now.
Yeah.
And be able to just put that in a container for when I do jump back in.
Mm.
And then my more recent stuff has been much more talking about like family history. And in that, then that being interrogations of talking about patriarchy and talking about white supremacy, but in much more ambiguous terms. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. Like for me, I an idea that I've really been working with, which I think you will be able to understand completely. I've lately, so like the body of work that I'm working right now is a collection of portfolios and essays that are all roughly around the figure of my great grandfather, who was like the first of his family born in America from Mexico, and the kind of position he stood in and everything that came after him, everything that was before him.
Right.
But I mean, it really more so is talking about myself and this journey of like decolonization and fighting against all these like power influences that are cultivated in me. But the structure that I've been using when I'm thinking about like various essays or bodies, like portfolios that are kind of weaving together, is this kind of like hero's journey, like Joseph Campbell thing.
Right.
But then even in that, I'm forced to recognize, which this is going back to what you're saying, that is like a very strictly Western influence.
Right.
And so the thing that's interesting for me is then maybe utilizing that structure in a way where, you know, the hero's journey is all about him arriving back at home. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he's gone through all of his things. He's defeated the dragon, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then when he arrives back at home, he realizes that's not the place for him. And he kind of goes off into the like next realm of it. And for me, the next realm of it really is then like the hero, once he arrives at that place, realizes that the idea of that journey itself, the like structure, the concept of the hero's journey is a Western influence. And to decolonize that is to tear it apart.
Yeah.
And so necessarily the point at which the hero's journey has been like finalized is also the point at which that whole
is destroyed.
That whole thing is destroyed. And that's been really interesting to me lately of embodying that, or
that's beautiful,
working in that mode of thinking.
That's very cool. That's awesome.
Yep.
I enjoy that. A lot of your work is, focus on the idea of history, and but not history in the sense of documentation necessarily, but history in the sense of information and cultivation of who you are and how you express in the world.
I think for me, like, the easiest way to talk about it is like that those are the materials that I'm just drawn to and want to investigate. And so that's all the like tilling part, is those are the fields that I'm working in.
Right.
But my interest isn't really in those things. Like you're saying, like my interest is much more in like poetics and language and ambiguity. And so those really then just become poetic tools of that's just what I'm using to cultivate a poetic language.
Yeah. That's awesome. This question is for both of you, because in both photography and in film, I guess, what word do you use for
probably film.
Film. Because you use film in photography, motion, motion film.
Moving pictures.
Moving pictures. In those moving motion pictures. The foundation of it is the capturing of light. And this interests me in the sense that everything is on the occult philosophical level, everything is vibration. And to be able to capture that in a still or a moving manner is to capture like a moment or a glimpse or an idea in light, and it's it's stuck there. It's you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can you express to me the understandings that you come to and the importance of light and how light and the concept of light has, I mean, go wherever you want to go, but how in general, how the concept of understand using an art form that is so heavily connected to understanding light has brought into life. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, folks, that concludes this Love Cult transmission. We are ending on a bit of a cliffhanger because, like I said at the beginning of the episode, this is part one of a two-part interview that I did with my friends Dylan and Kevin. So tune in with us next time as we finish up this interview. I hope you have enjoyed this space that we've been inhabiting for the past hour. This concludes Love Cult Transmission 0003. I am Justice the Mystic, clearing this spiritual space and closing this portal now. Love Cult.